Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like history, visual arts, communications, and comparative religion. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined in this program by Dr. Lee Francis from Laguna Pueblo, the CEO and founder of Native Realities. Some of his current projects include running Red Planet Comics and organizing global events like Indigenous Comic-Con and Indigipop X. As the head Indigenerd, Lee is dedicated to changing the perceptions and representations of Indigenous people in and through our popular culture.
We're so happy to be talking with you today, Lee. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how Indigenous Comic-Con has expanded to Indigipop X. What are some of the new areas or some of the new participants that you're seeing that you feel like are really exciting?
It's been such an amazing journey. We started 4 years ago in putting this together, and I just decided we needed to do something. So I started Indigenous Comic-Con. One, I wanted to showcase this for the general public, that Native folks are doing such really cool things across all these spectra, you know, comics and film and television and media, science fiction, games and whatnot. But I also wanted to create a space where Native folks could come together and network, because we're often very, very siloed. So the comic book folks are over at the comic cons, the game folks are over at the game sections, the, you know, science fiction and fantasy people at their sci-fi cons, and film and television people have their own film, you know, their film festivals. And we don't get a chance often to communicate and talk together unless we make specific trips to do this kind of stuff, or somebody plans and is like, we'll have a game section now at our film festival. So for me, it was a chance that Native folks could all come together and be creatives together, and to create a space that was, I mean, we'll say a safe space, for lack of a better term, but really a space that allowed Native folks to not have to repeat our history time and time again. I've done that as an academic, as a Native that often goes to, you know, individual conferences or is brought in for something. I have to start, let me tell you about the history of Natives in pop culture. And I have no problems with doing the education. I love talking. I love doing that. But there are a lot of folks, a lot of my friends that I know it's exhausting. It's exhausting work. And if that's not your gig and you're not an educator, say like me or somebody else, then, you know, you get this type of space that's very alienating. So we wanted to create a space where everybody could come together, they could interact, and anybody that came in would have to assimilate or acclimate to that world, where we didn't have to start all over again to tell you the history of Native people. You need to go look it up. There's a thing, you have a supercomputer in your pocket, you can figure out exactly what's happened.
It sounds like you focus then on what you're doing rather than what you are.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yes, yes. It's active, right? So it's the active verb. It's not, the identity comes from the doing. And that's been a big thing for me. It's a lived experience. When we talk about Native identity and who's Native and who's not Native, I mean, one of my basic assumptions is it a lived experience? And a lived experience goes beyond doing things like powwowing or dancing or dressing up in your regalia. That's the trappings that we see from pop culture. When we do our ceremonies and when we do our gatherings and our dances, that's a part of who we are. So that doing is the main function of the existence. And that, I think, is what's always often missed when you talk about appropriation. The appropriational aspects are because you like the cool outfits or you like the colors and the bells, not the lived existence. What does it mean to live out on the res? What does it mean to haul your own water? What does it mean to go out to sheep camp? What does it mean to bake bread first thing in the morning? That's the lived existence. So that's what we try to identify, because most of us have that lived existence. And the folks that are doing this kind of work have had some section of that existence in our lives, hanging out with our grandmas and listening to traditional stories, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that's the crux of this work. Putting together Indigenous Comic-Con and how we've expanded into Indigipop X has really been about how are we showcasing Native folks, that erasure part that we talked about earlier, of how Native folks are not thought about in certain areas. So we add Native wrestlers. And then I start hearing all these stories about a Cherokee Native wrestling league. It was so great. The bad guys are these thin and skinny Cherokee folks, and the heroes, the faces are like big and chunky and stocky because it's about eating. So the whole point is that, like, you know, the heels, the bad guys, are the ones that don't eat what their grandma's cooking them, right? They're not honoring your traditions by making sure you eat. So hearing these stories, this is stuff that people don't know. They don't know this out in the modern pop culture world. We don't have, you know, Native heroes that are associating with Native values in some of these spaces, right? So a bigger focus this last couple of years on Indigenous futurisms, right? So that's been a huge thing of how we're focusing on what is this concept of Indigenous futurisms and how are we carrying it forward from what Grace Dillon put together? Like, what are we doing in terms of conceptualizing this and moving it forward in literature, in art, in communities, in pop culture? You know, our food is such a huge thing. Foodie culture is so much entrenched in popular culture now. This year, we've reached out. We're hoping, we're crossing the fingers, that we can get roller derby. There's an Indigenous roller derby team. There's a subsection of pop, like a nerd culture that's really like roller derby. We're going to add that as well. Robotics, engineering, drawing out all of these areas where Native folks are not thought to exist. We do exist there. We know that. We have so many people in so many instances and so many locations. We have Native astronauts. We have Native engineers and writers. We got all this stuff, but it hasn't hit that mainstream. And that's what we want to be able to showcase.
Native students put the rover on Mars, right?
Right, exactly.
We've been talking a lot about comics and how those worlds have been so influential for young people. But can we talk a little bit about some of the games that are emerging out of the Indigenous futurisms and some of the interactives?
That's the other part. So we showcase games, right? Gaming is a multi-billion dollar industry.
We're talking about video games now.
Right, video games. Okay. Yeah, and tabletop games as well.
Well, that's why I'm asking. Yeah.
No, it is both. So what I break it down as analog and digital. So analog being tabletop, card games, dice games, you know, things that you engage other people, and then digital being the video game side, immersive experiences, VR, AR type stuff. The tabletop industry is going through this incredible golden age. It's making more money than almost any other category on Kickstarter. I just had friends of mine here that raised almost $500,000 for a role-playing game. The cost prohibitions and the gatekeepers have just kind of left. So you got all these incredible Native game designers, Indigenous game designers that are creating, you know, these experiential pieces that are based on traditional stories, that are pushbacks in terms of political. There's a lot of politics that are engaged in these games.
How does politics come into play here?
I will say the queen of game, Native game design is Dr. Elizabeth LaPonce, Michigan State University. She's Anishinaabe. She has the most games that have been created by a Native person that she has been the lead designer on and has been associated with, you know, so many others in other ways. So she did one recently called Thunderbird Strike, based on a Thunderbird and traditional stories of the Thunderbird, and it strikes out at these things that are creating pipelines. So it's striking out at bulldozers and, you know, these big giant mover trucks. And at the same time, the lightning also brings back the animals and the people to life. Well, she got death threats and rape threats. She got targeted by Fox News. She got targeted by a lot of the, you know, this right media saying that she was an eco-terrorist, that was fostering eco-terrorism. So the politics are very much inherent. She's got another game where you're like, called Invaders, where it's almost like Space Invaders, but you're Native folks shooting arrows at these aliens that are coming down into your space. And I think it's really critical, especially with what she's done and the heat that she took and what we did with like Standing Rock and Idle No More. I'm like, we just saw 300,000 barrels of oil or gallons of oil that spilled into South Dakota just this last week, right? The Natives are like, yeah, this is what we were trying to stop. So when we create games like this, we're creating these interactive experiences, and there's VR experiences. Like, they did a bunch of like 360 filming and VR filming of being up at Standing Rock. So you can actually put this on, and there's like interactive pieces that go with this. So a lot of the game designers are looking at how do we do messaging around, you know, Native identity and existence in a way that will engage people to see what we're seeing, right? Because that narrative has been eliminated oftentimes, or it's essentialized, right? So looking at Standing Rock, it's like, well, there's the Native on horseback, and we're just doing, you know, the Native facing tanks. And I was like, we've seen this narrative. That's what Western pop culture media wants us to see. But this is what it looks like when we take over and create these games, and we showcase how this looks like from our perspective. Beth says, like, she wasn't expecting the backlash. I'm sure she knew a little bit. She's a smart woman. So, you know, she knew something was coming, but she's like, I just wanted to tell a story that was based on my traditional stories from my people. This is how we're utilizing this media to push this forward this is monster stories, right? These are monsters for our communities. Our heroes and our elementals and our whatevers are fighting back against that to keep our people safe and whole.
I think there's something really critical there that you touched on, which is that whether it's through a game or a comic book, that you're talking about a very specific perspective from this indigenous experience being brought forward into the future. Mm-hmm. And so do you think that some of that kind of backlash is directly related to what you are almost saying is the messaging? I mean, I'm trying to think if there's even something analogous on the non-native side. I'm thinking it was like a game like Grand Theft Auto. Mm-hmm. You know, the backlash was, well, maybe there's a little too much like rape and mayhem, but that's sort of general. And it seems almost like you're describing a kind of backlash that's almost taking it very personally.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that's because there's a very different perspective being brought forward there, whether it's intentional or not?
Yes.
I mean, I guess in some cases it is intentional.
I think it's very intentional on the native side, and I think it's because we've entered a very binary age, a very conflictual age, where what we've been told and fed by popular media is that if something else comes in, then it means something else is, it's a zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. So if I get to tell my story, then it's going to take away someone else's story.
If I'm good, then you must be bad.
Right,
If I'm the good guy, then you are the bad guy.
Right.
Or vice versa,
right? And even more so, just from the storytelling perspective, even, you know, the meta or the even deeper than that is that I am telling my story, then that means you get one less story to tell, which is a fallacy, right? It's an absolute falsehood. We have so much room for all these stories. And that's what I love about what I do. It's the brilliance of saying, we can have this story. And it was one of those things that I always feel like the criticism when Native folks bring up issues and we're like, hey, that's not, you know, like, we don't like the way that character was created. What are we told? Right? Or what are we told as, like, you know, communities of color or marginalized communities? It's like, well, you don't have to watch it. Right? And so when we do the same thing, it's like, well, how dare you? You're promoting eco-terrorism or whatever. It's like, but you don't have to play the game. From our perspective, it's how we're telling stories.
I'm so interested in how some of these stories diverge, even when you're taking sort of cliche genres. And I'm thinking of Grace Dillon's critical anthology of Indigenous futurisms. And a couple of things that she points out is, one, that when you're talking about time travel or slips in time, that the concept is very different and maybe less disorienting than it is for characters coming out of European traditions. But also when you're talking about expanding the human race to other planets, the concept of colonization is really different. Can you unpack some of that, what you see?
So Grace premises this in a couple of ways, and she outlines it really great in Walking the Clouds. You know, her formalizing the concept of what Indigenous futurisms and all of these wonderful little tendrils and threads that come from Indigenous literature and the way that the, you know, like the slipstream and the time stream works. If you go back to Indigenous philosophies and understandings, Western time is linear. So it starts at point A and ends at point B. Indigenous time and Indigenous philosophies, its native time is cyclical. And so therefore, it won't be disorienting because you can already see the other side of the circle from where you're standing no matter what. You know, when you create games and you create a game of about discovery and exploration, like so natives in space, like what does that mean when you think about the concepts of colonization, right? I yield to her in the sense of unpacking or at least providing the framework for these terms for all of us to be able to discuss, both as academics and as players, to say, yeah, these are the things that we have to reconcile with this underpinning of a native understanding and philosophy. If you think of, you know, what does it mean to be Indigenous in space? And we saw that at Star Trek, and like Chakotay was Indigenous and, you know, he had his like vision quest and he did these, but that was, again, that goes back to the trappings of native identity rather than the deeper philosophical constructs. I have been working on a short story that talks about native folks basically being, you know, being forced off of Earth to another planet, and they've been there for a while, and then other people start to come in. So what does that mean when, what are we talking about around this concept of territory and diaspora? Right? If we think of Cherokee homeland, that's North Carolina. They removed the Trail of Tears and the forced removal. Well, now it's Oklahoma, and that's Cherokee homeland. What does that mean between the two? And what does that mean to be Indigenous in one way or the other? And so science fiction and Indigenous futurisms allows us to explore those concepts from our perspective. But what does it mean when you do go to another place through forced removal? Did you displace someone else? And then what happens? Are you now Indigenous from that space anymore? Because if we look back at the way that history has been presented about Native people and the arguments against or the arguments for colonization is that, well, Native people weren't originally here from here anyway. They came across the land bridge. So therefore, it's okay for us to take all the land.
Well, we all came from Martian spores.
I mean,
you know, come on.
We came from stars, right? We tell star stories. We came from the star people, right? People all over have these stories. I just believe that a lot of folks have forgotten.
For more about Native Realities, visit nativerealities.com. For more about the upcoming Indigipop X, visit indigenouspopx.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten. We had production assistance by Tristan Clum.